Luke. Luke.
Ben?
You will listen to the Wampa's Lair podcast.
Podcast?
There you will hear your hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, as they discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out. Oh, and watch out for Wampas.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 187, Bloodline and the Big Three. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Han Solo to my Luke Skywalker, because, you know, we're talking Big Three. We have Carl LeClaire.
Classic, Jason. Just classic.
Indeed.
I'm glad you made me Han, because if I was Luke, I would not be as pleased as being Han.
That's why I made you Han.
Well, since we're doing Big Three, I guess we have to say the Princess Leia to our Han and Luke. We've got a great special guest. It's Mark Herleman.
It's Chewie impression.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guys.
How you doing, Mark?
I am doing good, man. Just got off work. I'm feeling nice and relaxed. You know that just worked 7 hours and I just sat in a chair, kind of feel you get in the back of your legs. It's almost like when you go to Celebration Anaheim for your first time and you're like, a trailer I've never seen before.
Oh, man. I'm so jealous of everybody in Celebration Europe this year. They're going to be the first to see the new Rogue One trailer and maybe even Episode 8 footage and who the heck knows what else they'll see. I wish I could go to England, but I can't.
I'm in the same boat, sunk at the bottom of the triangle.
Well, I was going to say, if you guys are in a boat, at least you could sail over.
No, but that would take us way too long, and it would be over by the time we got there.
That's true. Hey, you know what I'm excited about?
What are you excited about, Carl?
Talking Bloodline.
Bloodline.
One of the best books in the new canon, in my opinion, and I know you enjoyed it, Jason, and... Mark, you weren't as big a fan, I think, as Jason and I, but that's okay. You are forgiven.
Yeah, I've heard the same consensus, though, that you guys have, because, you know, my co-host on Beyond the Films, Nathan Butler, he really liked it and said he liked it even more than Lost Stars, which, you know, he and I were both, saying Lost Stars is up there, the number one new canon, although I kind of almost say Dark Disciple for me is my number one, because I like the fact that it had an end fate for a character that was already established. I felt like that gives it a little more gravitas, but I don't know. When I read this one, like... I think it made me have a lot of epiphanies. Like, you know, we all know I'm a Legends fan.
Mm-hmm.
We all know I've always liked Luke's story in Legends. When it comes to canon, I was a Han fan. But I was always a big fan of New Jedi Order. And I think one of the main reasons, and it wasn't until I was reading this, is that in the New Jedi Order, Leia finally steps up and becomes a Jedi. And when the new canon, you know, they erased all the backstory and stuff and it all became Legends, I was like, oh, you know, Leia could start training earlier. And this book definitely sets in stone what Leia's been doing with her training. And
it's not much.
It's not much. And while, like, you know, everything about this book is well executed, I will say that. Like, nothing is a throwaway character, throwaway lines, throwaway situations. Like, everything happens for a reason that doesn't feel too trumped up. It just all felt like it was all natural and cohesive. But I don't know, man. That angle was the one that really bothered me. Like, I was like, what? But I like the fact, though, that unlike with Legends, the back and forth of her deciding to be in politics and stuff, you know, that didn't end until the New Jedi Order when she was finally like, I'm done. But this was like a, you know, it's over and done, and we know why. And I like that, whereas with Legends, it was something like you, as the reader, were just as frustrated with the political scene as Leia, and you were like, finally! You step, finally, woman, I've been waiting for you to slap some sense into somebody and say, I'm done with this political stuff. I'm just going to be a Jedi and cut off arms. Like, so that was like the angle for me that I was having a real hard time with this. But when I stop and I think about like the, you know, the general Leia aspect of what we saw in The Force Awakens and stuff, you know, this is critical background stuff. And so I think that this becomes one of the most essential of the new reads, even though it's not one of those that I think is necessarily critical. So that's one of the things. I've been, like I said to you guys before the show, I have been listening to the audiobook of this over and over and over again because I've been working at the theater. And I'm probably up to my sixth or seventh back-to-back listening because, you know, I'm just vacuuming all night. So I just play whatever I'm listening to, and the audiobooks have been working. So I've been just cranking through it. And because Nathan really liked it, I was just like, man, I don't know. What is it about this? I've just been going back over it. And again, you know, it's the – my – misconceptions or my preconceived notions of what I feel like should be going on with Leia's character and with Han's character and with Chewie. Like, those are the angles. Like, I find it more interesting, and yet I can't be excited about the interesting yet. Like, I'm just like, this is kind of perplexing. Like, I don't know if I'm happy with this. It's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, I'm not angry about anything. Like, the book was good, but it wasn't great for me. You know, I recognize, though, other people are really enjoying it, so I'm giving it that shot. I've always said, you know, if you go back and reread any book, it'll become your favorite. Now, I've re-listened to this one a lot, and this is the first book that's kind of breaking that theory for me. Normally, by my fifth reread, I'm like, this book is awesome! I Jedi, everybody needs to get it! Read Star by Star! You know, but this one, I'm still having a hard time with. I would still recommend Dark Disciple, Lost Stars, Battlefront, Lords of the Sith. I would still put those up there. But I think that the big draw on this one is the fact that this one is your journey to The Force Awakens. Unlike all those other books with that title that really did squat, aside from make fans like me just drop your head into your palm and go, oh, come on, story group, really? That's the journey to The Force Awakens? What the heck does that have to do with the journey at all? This book actually does provide that. Almost more so than Before the Awakening by Greg Rucka, which was also a great Journey to The Force Awakens book that wasn't part of the Journey to The Force Awakens. So yeah, like, I don't know. I've been thinking about this a lot.
I can tell. Well, we're going to get dive into this book a little bit more in depth, but Carl.
Yeah, I forgot we had a matchup to go over because Mark was already so deep into it. I thought we were about to begin, but I am glad we have Mark here because we do. We have an awesome matchup to go over, which pits a Legends character versus a new canon character. Ooh. And Jason, you mentioned at the end of the last episode, you know, this was not an opportunity for people to air grievances over whether they hate Legends or whether they love Legends and are pissed. Sadly, a few folks did that, you know, seem to ignore that Legends exists. But I think most of it was in good fun. Our matchup was, and Mark, I don't think you know this, but it's we wanted to do a Fallen Solo twins battle. So we have Darth Kitus versus Kylo Ren.
How funny.
Is that your matchup?
This is what I... Okay, here. I'm dropping it in the chat. That's what I had ready. I had Ben Kylo Solo versus Jason Solo.
Oh, damn.
I had another one in mind, so I will switch to my alternative. That's what I was surprised. I was like, don't tell me. I want to see this. I have this feeling. I'm feeling like I'm dialed in tonight. Oh, that's a great matchup, guys.
All right. So before we weigh in on who we think would win, I'm just going to go ahead real quick and blow through the responses we got on this matchup. And we've got quite a few. I'm not going to read any of them. I'll get everybody's name and vote because we are going to have a lot to talk about on this episode. Real quick, Travis Magruder votes Darth Kitus. Stephen Jones, Kylo. Dave Laidlaw, excuse me, Darth Kitus. Cody Murphy threw in Admiral Ackbar for some reason. Brian V. Klein, Darth Kitus. Scott Murray, Kylo. Christoph Keitzman, Kitus. Jeffrey Beaumont, Kylo. Michael Wallace, Kylo. Travis Fritsch, Kylo. Thomas Davis, Kylo. Joey Litson, Kylo. Or Ben, as he yells. Randy Giles gives it to Kitus. Ubaidullah Abdul Malik gives it to Darth Kitus. Michael Morris, Kylo. Eliezer Rodriguez, Kitus. Brian Bailey, Kylo Ren. Adam J. Taylor gives it to Kitus. Imre Dillam, I'm not going to try and pronounce that. I'm sorry, Imre. Gives it to Darth Kitus. David Furr, Kylo Ren, and then on Twitter, at Lowry Neal, Kylo Ren, at Bradley W. Hall, excuse me, Kylo Ren, at Jedi Jack 13, Kylo Ren, and at King Og 9 Cubits, Kylo Ren. So that gives us a final Larian tally of 15 for Kylo Ren and 8 for Darth Kitus. Carl.
I get to go first?
Yes.
Good. Because I don't want Mark stealing my answers. Or wait. That made no sense. No, I'm just kidding. I meant I don't want to steal Mark's answers. There we go. But I'm going to give it to Kytus. I definitely prefer Kylo Ren as a character more. I'm a huge Kylo Ren fan. But just looking at what Kytus did, and that was the last serious legend stuff I read, Kytus was pretty powerful. And I know I'm not stealing this from somebody, but I do want to obviously point out a few folks that weighed in, pointed this out as well, that, you know, Jason Solo came up during a huge wartime, right? Like, he was so involved in the Yuuzhan Vong War. He learned new ways of tapping into the Force. We know he's pretty darn good with a lightsaber. And he's a much more collected character than the Kylo Ren we meet, obviously, thus far in Force Awakens. Kylo's a little bit more unstable, a little bit more, you know, Anakin, Revenge of the Sith type deal. Whereas Kytus has a very driven purpose. He's a little bit more collected. I just think he's more powerful. Again, this is something we're going to talk about later, and obviously I want Mark to weigh on this, but you know, I think to a certain degree, Legends made our characters more like superheroes than anything else. That's one of my critiques of Legends, is it took a lot of the big characters and made them almost into like demigods. So I think Kylo Ren is a far more realistic type character in the Star Wars movie world, whereas the Legends characters were kind of off the page, almost like Clone Wars characters, right? Like, if you think of Genndy Tartakovsky's series, I think I actually said it right.
Tartakovsky.
You know, damn it! But you know, like, you just, obviously it's made, you know, it's a cartoon. It's meant to be kind of fanciful. I feel like that's what some of the Legends characters become. And I think, you know, so given that, you know, Jason Solo comes up through something much more intense than we can assume Ben Solo did, a relative peacetime as opposed to constant war in the Legends canon. So I think Jason's just got that added edge of experience. He's tapped into a lot of different avenues of the Force. So I think he's more powerful Force-wise, and he's probably, I don't think he's more skilled lightsaber combat person, but he's more collected and powerful in the Force, and that gives him that edge. So I give it to Darth Kytus, but I've said enough, and we've got an expert sitting right over here. Mark, what the hell do you say?
I mean, I hate to tell people they're wrong, but most of you Larians, you guys voted the wrong way. You know, I want to say Kylo too, but I can't, because the bottom line at the end of the day, the reason why Jason Solo became a Sith Lord was because there was nothing else out there in the realm of the Force to learn. He'd learned it all. Fallen Nazi. He went and learned it from the Keldorans. I mean, you name it. If there was somebody using the Force to learn the White Lightning, the Potentium, there were so many different things he went out and learned, especially during that 5-year sojourn where he took off after the New Jedi Order. You know, and even during the New Jedi Order, you know, he wanted to tap out. He was not ready to use the Force. He was afraid to use the Force and all this stuff. He went on this huge journey. And you're right about the aspect of the demigods. You know, Luke especially became one so big, and I think that that's why every character from the New Jedi Order and in that era especially, because Luke became so powerful, the rest kind of were following along in his wake. You know, they had no choice but to be pulled along in the eddies of his current. You know, I mean, to compare to Luke, I mean, no one really could, and therefore, you know, he's teaching them all the same stuff. So in theory, they're all going to get a little more powerful. I mean, you kind of just go with that angle of, well, he's the chosen one's son, so of course he's going to be like super awesome, and then Jason's going to be just a little bit more awesome than that. But what I find interesting about these two characters is that they are both the same ends by different means. Now, that's his, they both, you know, had two different angles that their parents took. Jason was raised knowing his grandfather was Darth Vader from pretty much birth, whereas Ben was not. Ben, it was kept a secret. It came out later, and, you know, they both fell. But the angle that Leia took, whether to tell her children or not to tell her children, didn't really matter when it came to the terms of the son. And I thought that was something interesting, that even though they changed all that background and stuff, that happened. Now, Kylo, on the other hand, we know he's the master of the Knights of Ren. You know, it's been rumored that he created the Knights of Ren. I can't remember if they actually confirmed that and then unconfirmed it again. But we also know his training is incomplete. Mm-hmm. You know that Snoke is going to finish training him. Training him as what? We don't know. We don't know if Snoke knows anything about the Sith or if he's some new, you know, Chakabala. You know, what's the Chakabala? Oh, you don't know the Chakabala? They were bigger than the Jedi once. You know, we don't know what they are. And so we don't know where his training is. We know he was powerful enough to take out what Luke's order was. If it was 5 kids and Luke or 25 kids and Luke, we don't really know. That'll come up down the road. But you have to assume he had a lot of power to a degree. But again, getting back to that whole, you know, if you think about the Force as just like one color spectrum, and you've got this big wheel of colors in Legends, and each one of those wheels is just a different way of looking at the Force. You had the Night Sisters doing theirs, the Fallen Aussie doing theirs, you know, all these different ones with these different shades of colors and stuff. Jason had a much more well-rounded palette when it came to all of those powers. Now, if you take that, set off the side, and then think about what we saw in The Force Awakens, you know, Kylo was bested by a stormtrooper and a girl that had no official training. I mean, that leans to the fact that he is not as trained as we would like him to be. So there's a lot of questions there, I think, that Kylo could change down the road. Like, we could get some more information that gives him a lot more in his arsenal. But right now, with what we got on The Force Awakens, I don't think there's enough to really give him that kind of clout. I think what we've got is a lot of people looking at him and thinking, hey, it's Boba Fett. That guy's awesome. I like his armor. I was there. My daughter bought me a really cool Kylo Ren poster, and then we watched the movie. She goes, Mom, did I make a mistake? Did I get Dad a poster he's not going to like? I had to question it. I'm still mad as heck. You killed my favorite character, Kylo. So, you know, maybe I'm still mad at him for that. I'm not sure.
Well, I'm going to make it 3-for-3 here. Hold on.
I just want to point out how Mark just went completely silent. okay.
Just, right,
sorry. Mark dropped the mic.
I should have made a dropping mic.
I was just going to say, you dropped the mic.
Yep. That's awesome. But yeah, I'm going to make it 3-for-3 here on the podcast. I also going to say Kadus wins. For many of the same reasons you guys have said, he's more powerful in the Force and skilled enough with a lightsaber to take on Kylo Ren. And probably the most freaky thing about Darth Kadus that definitely puts him over the top for me is his ability to like influence minds and, you know, wipe minds a bit, which he was much more skilled and much more subtle at doing than Kylo Ren ever managed to do with his, you know, mind invasion stuff that he was doing in The Force Awakens. So, yeah, I'm not going to belabor the point much further than that, but I would say Kadus is, at this point in time, more than a match for Kylo Ren. So, but that gives us a final tally for this matchup of 15 for Kylo Ren, 11 for Kadus, and then 1 for Admiral Ackbar. Thanks, Cody.
Oh man. Yeah, well, you know, then that this was kind of the purpose of that matchup too, was to kind of springboard us into this conversation of, you know, and Jason and I, you know, you and I were both very vocal from the get-go. Not an aggressive way, but we were both very okay with the fact that they had rebranded the EU as Legends. You know, neither of us, we were very open on the podcast back when that first happened. You know, we're okay with that. To us, Star Wars is ultimately a visual medium. And I know for a fact, you know, and Jason, you and I can probably both recall some of the messages we got, some really well thought out messages. There's a lot of fans out there, which again, this just shocks me. I don't say that as a judgment. There's some fans that prefer the EU. They prefer the written Star Wars. I don't get that, but hey, that everybody loves Star Wars in their own way. And again, that's awesome. But, you know, at the end of the day, I will always prefer the films to anything I've ever read, except for the Revenge of the Sith novels better than that movie. Besides that, you know, I think I was okay with it. And, you know, I was curious to see where it went. You know, and to me, it made sense, right? Like, they can't make an Episode 7 and then have all this baggage of Legends to deal with. You know, that's a lot. They essentially did it not to limit themselves, not because they hated Legends. You know, I don't think it was a slam on that. It was more of just a, you know, creative step. That's all you had to do. But again, I think it's also important too, because I know for myself and Jason, I don't want to speak for you, but you can say more about this. I got out of Legends a while ago because I was just kind of getting sick of it. And, you know, I felt like everything was just really recycled. The stories weren't strong. The characters were really weak. The plots were getting ridiculous. And again, I know that sounds really harsh, but that's just how I thought. So I kind of fell out of Legends. So it's really cool seeing this new canon now. And kind of the point of this conversation is to look at, you know, one of the newest books by Claudia Gray, Bloodline, which I think all of us can agree is a great book, and from varying degrees. And we learn so much from this book. I think it's, you know, kind of like you alluded to, Mark, it's the first new canon book, specifically, a Journey of the Force Awakens books, that gives us any real meat into that journey. Makes sense that we weren't getting any of that till after the film. They didn't want to spoil anything. But, you know, it really gives us a sense of the political situation. It gives us a great sense of where the First Order is coming from. And obviously it does a very great amount to give us a look at Han and Leia, where they've come. And Luke is barely touched on. That's something obviously we're going to talk about. But I kind of want to jump right into this. And if I'm cutting anybody off, just say so. But I want to jump into one of the biggest points. And Mark, you've already alluded to it. And I should say real quick, because we've yet to say this. Spoilers ahead, everybody. If you have not read Bloodline and you don't want to be spoiled, please stop listening to the show and come back after you have. Or if you don't care, obviously feel free to continue listening. But I think all three of us can agree we're not going to hold anything back. You know, we want to talk about the ins and the outs. So that being said, spoilers ahead, like right about now. I'm going to get into a big one right now, folks. So if you've not read it, please, you know, run away, you know, or something. I don't know. Turn it off. But the first thing I want to bring up and get your guys' take on it, though, is the fact, and Mark, you did allude to it earlier, but the fact that the galaxy at large does not know, when I say the galaxy at large, the only people that know Leia's true parentage and Luke's true parentage are... Yeah, Luke and Leia's true parentage are Luke, Leia, Han, and probably Chewie. That's it. Nobody knows.
That's a big probably, because even Leia is like, she's not sure if Han ever told Chewie or not. Like, so she's even in the dark as to whether Chewie knows.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, R2 knows, but R2 can, you know, keep a secret. But that's not mentioned at all in the book.
I think Chewie didn't know, because Chewie sent her message. Although, but Chewie's got the heart of gold. Like, Chewie would have sent the message either way.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's very true that it is one of those odd scenarios, because in Legends, it got out there, you know, very quickly that, you know, Luke and Leia's parentage, you know, was Darth Vader and everything. And so when we get to Bloodline, and this is a mere 6 years before The Force Awakens. You know, it's not like 6 years after Return of the Jedi or something like that, where it's been hidden for, you know, a couple of years, and then it gets out. No, this is like decades of the secret, you know, not being anywhere near the light of day. And then all of a sudden, you know, obviously we'll get into it, but it gets revealed. But it is so interesting that the secret is so carefully kept that not even Ben knows it.
Yeah.
And it's a completely different dynamic, you know, with the galaxy at large, because nobody can go, you know, can throw that in Luke or Leia's face at this point. And it's not something that they are judged by at this point either. But the fact, it was more interesting to me, the fact that Leia was almost just sort of kicking the ball down the road in telling Ben about the whole situation. She's like, well, we'll tell him later. You know, I don't know if now is the right time and all that. And Luke and Han were being very patient with her in this. I think Luke would have told him right out, you know, outright, if Leia hadn't stopped him. But, and Han probably, you know, would have said something to the fact that, well, he's got to find out eventually, but Leia's like, no, not yet, not yet. And we find out that she's the one that's trying to control this secret. And, it's just a very interesting dynamic shift.
I would almost even say there's less control with Leia in canon than there was with Leia in Legends. Legends had kids due to Vader. That was something, it wasn't until Vader came to her, and I think it was in Truce of Baraka, or Baraku, I always say that wrong, his spirit came to her and tried asking for forgiveness, and she's like, no, I'm not going to do it. And even then, like, it took her some time to get over that, which is eventually why later she named Anakin was to forgive her father finally and come to that. But the interesting thing that I found was, you know, back in Legends, it was Luke that really took the brunt of the heat for his dad being Vader, and Leia was like untouchable. It was like, oh, she's got a proven record. But when this comes out and the beans, it was like, whoa. I mean, like, listening to the audiobook, January Wilson? I can't remember the lady. She does this great job. She's playing Corsella. And she does the part where she's like, she just says this one great line about how, that's right, I don't have to stay. And just the pain in her voice, like, you know, when she finds that out, and then later when she comes back to apologize and stuff, like, there was just some really great moments where I was kind of shocked, you know. And then they also had a moment where one of them, it was Lady Clarice, she was saying, you know, bringing up Luke, and Leia's just like, oh no, they're going to use my dad, you know, to come at Luke too. And it was just interesting because it was always the other way around. It was like, you know, well, we got to stop Luke, these Jedi. And Leia was trying to petition for him, which was the other angle that I thought was interesting about this. You know, Carl, you're talking about how it was political. And, you know, at this point in Legends, Leia was already a chief of state. I think she was chief of state even twice. I mean, Han was the first husband of the New Republic. But that never happened here. So, like, she never rose that high to power, which was an interesting – again, I kept finding that – that's the key word for me with this book, is I found a lot of things interesting about what they chose to do. And now, you know, that Mon Mothma happened to be more of a burden to the New Republic overall because she was kind of, like, doing things herself and had this charismatic presence that allowed people to kind of just, you know, meet in a middle ground where now they don't. So it's just, I don't know. It was one of those things that really kind of threw me off by that, was she definitely had a lot more control of the situation in Legends.
Yeah. Go on.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, I didn't know if you wanted to weigh in on that.
The political situation is always fascinating to me. Like is a strong word. I'm interested in what goes on in American politics, and I watch it sometimes. But when we, you know, in films and TV shows and everything, I like political drama. And so a lot of the political stuff in this is right up in my wheelhouse. And so when things start going down, of course, there's this big political football that gets beat back and forth all over the place in this book. I suppose we should probably let everybody know a little bit as to what the situation is. The New Republic is at this sort of crisis of fracturing because of the ideologies of two different groups. There's the centrists and the... I'm forgetting the other word. The other
populists.
One.
See, at this point, it's not even fracturing. They've completely come to a standstill. The only thing they'll all agree on is that compromise is not the answer, which is funny, as Mon Mothma was like the queen of compromise.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, due to ideology, they're almost incapable of working with each other. And so eventually, you know, obviously there's a mission that Leia and one of the centrist senators goes on.
Ryloth Yendor comes up to him and he's telling him about the Nyctos, and the new black market that's rose with what's his name, Yendai or something Die. Man, I've been listening to this up the wazoo. I was just listening to it last night. Riven Die.
Yeah, Riven D or Riven Die or yeah.
Yeah, their voices, the way that those were voiced, I don't know if either one of you guys listened to the audiobook, but January used the same voice for all of them. So it was at times it was really hard to tell which one was which because like they all sound like Riven. You're like, wait, what? but when they go to do that, they stumble on the fun trail of what we learned to be the group that is starting the First Order, which... Like, the way that played out, like, the first time I didn't catch that Lady Carice was part of that group until she's the one that's like, the First Order! She's, like, all getting all giddy with herself. You're like, wait, whoa, wait, what? But, like, so that was how I liked the way that it kind of naturally came together. It was like, you know, there was a reason to go to this place. When they go to this place, they find out this bit of information. When they look into that bit of information, they find this other one. And all of this plays out so well because they've got this other senator that's part of the populace with them. And he's there. He doesn't quite trust Leia. Leia doesn't quite trust him. But because of his ability to look at what good could have been out of the Empire's order and stuff. You know, he had his collection with the Empire and stuff. He naturally had this uncanny ability to walk that line with these people that really wanted the Empire back. And there's a great moment later where he's at a party and he has an epiphany. You know, these people actually want the Empire back, and I just want to have the Empire in name only. I don't want Palpatine. I didn't like Vader, and these guys are all worshiping him. So there was that really cool moment as well. But as he discovers more things and stuff, he stumbles into it. And, like, you know, the way that Lady Carice finds out he has information, like, at first, she's just guessing that he has this information. And then she starts, you know, working things in and trying to tighten a noose around him to get him in their camp. And as that portrays and works out, it unfoils for him, like, in such a great way. Like, I don't know if you guys, like, when Leia at the end of the book and she finds out his fate, like, for me, that was probably one of the saddest moments in the book. I was just like, he's talking about the fact that he was helping get all these laws taken care of. He's like, oh, I kind of regret the fact that we got this one taken care of. You're like, oh, I bet, man. You poor SOB.
Yeah, but it's interesting because while there is this mission, you know, to track down the black market stuff that's going on, that's almost like the side story. That's almost the background story compared to a lot of the political maneuvering in this book, depending on where you are in this book, I guess. But I like this book a lot, and I'm trying to pin down an exact reason, and it's very hard. But I think part of it is just learning so much about the state of the galaxy leading into The Force Awakens and how that all was established at this point. And I know we're kind of all over the place right now, but bear with us, folks. We're having fun with this. So, do you have something else, Carl? I don't know. We've been talking a bit. So,
I think the political situation is one of, to me, the downsides of the book because it's a little too close to home. The populace versus the oh my god, what the hell's the other group?
The centrists.
Thank you, the centrists. You know, it's to me, it's a little too glaringly Democrats versus Republicans. You know, the centrists are the Democrats, and the populace are the the centralists. Centrists want to centralize the power, so they're kind of Democrats, and then the other. You know, the populists are kind of the Republicans, I guess. Although I don't think Leia would be much of a Republican.
There's even a moment where Leia talks about the fact that her faction have opposites too. So it's like,
right.
You've got two factions, and then you've got two factions.
Exactly. But, I think, there's always, you know, from what I can remember, there's always like this political unrest throughout the EU. You know, Legends is full of political strife. This political strife just feels too similar to the American political system to me. It kind of bothered me. I remember the part when Leia first goes into, how do you say his name? Ransom? How do you pronounce it?
Yeah, Ransom Kestrefo.
Yeah. So when she goes to his office the first time, right, and she's so pissed off by all of his like imperial,
memorabilia.
Yeah, you know, she's so pissed. All it made me think of was like the Confederate flag issue in our country, right? Like, you know, there's people who say, well, I have it because, you know, I'm into the Civil War history, and it's like, you know, they're ignorant of the fact that it's still a form of racism. Like, and like that situation right there, I was like, this is too American. Like, it bothered me. You know, I don't want Star Wars in my real world in any way to interact. It's fine that Star Wars can what's that?
What was good about that scene, though, when I was just thinking about this last night when I was listening to it, because I just hit that spot in the book, and she was thinking about, you know, what is it about the Empire that can make him worship it? But she didn't ask the question then. And she asked it again later, and when she asked it, that's when he finally come, like, no, I don't worship the Emperor. I just worship the idea of the Order. You know, but it was cool because, like, she had the thought, but she bit her tongue because she was so mad. Like, you know, everything was so organic. Like, you know, it was like, well, told waited, and then when they did it, like, there was just some implications at the end of the book. Like, that was the thing. Like, each time I read it and listened to it again and again, I realized how many of the end plot all came together.
I think, you know, it's, you know, I'm not trying to say it's the same, right? Because it's not, it's definitely not the same, but I think they've brought things a little too close to home. And, you know, I don't know if there's anything you can necessarily do about it. What's done, it's done. You know, I think just to look at the political situation and looking at that and how it kind of informs the Big Three's relationship in this galaxies, you know, Mark, you kind of already alluded to this, but alluded to, you said it. But, you know, the reality that Leia is certainly not in the same position she is in the EU. In the EU, she is, very much so the political leader. She's, you know, the head of state for a number of years. Whereas here, you know, they at least do a good job of explaining why there still isn't a central figure. And I think, they do a really great job of explaining how afraid the New Republic is of ever becoming what the Empire was. So as a result, they are very reluctant to give any single person, a great deal of power. But they also recognize that there's nothing happening. The New Republic is really starting to splinter. I can just imagine, Mon Mothma sitting behind a desk, I will not let this New Republic, which has stood for almost 20 years, be split in two, it's, things are obviously going bad, and that's where, it is Lady Carice, right, that proposes the idea of a first senator. Yeah. And, yep. And that's really what, yeah, and that's really what gets kind of the ball moving of the bigger picture of the story. And, essentially what leads to the truth of Leia's identity coming out. This is a big picture, look at this story. But I think again, when you had Legends very much took Star Wars at its kind of like fanciful mythology and ran with that into Legends, where I feel like, and they kind of did this with Force Awakens, which is why you probably got it in Bloodline as well, is you're getting something that's more, I almost want to say real world. And that's, whether you like that or not is your own opinion. I think, in Legends, Han and Leia, they're obviously not together all the time, but they're together quite a bit. They're constantly going on adventures. It seems like in our new canon, though, Han and Leia are barely together. They're still very much in love, even 6 years before Force Awakens. Leia's constantly thinking about how much she wants to be with Han, but she also knows, she can never leave the political world, and Han kind of knows that as well. So they're kind of respecting each other's own journeys, but that's so different from Legends. And to me, I critique what they've done with Han. I don't like what they've done with Han. I almost prefer, not everything about Legends Han, but I at least prefer the fact that Han really does become part of Leia's vision for the New Republic. He becomes very much, an active member in that, because I think that's a huge part of who Han Solo is by the end of Return of the Jedi, right? Like, he goes through this transformation of who he is as a person, and I feel like they've unwritten all of that. By the time we get to Force Awakens. Now, everybody's, I love Lawrence Kasdan. I don't want to critique him in any way, but, they all say, nobody knows Han Solo like Larry Kasdan. I start to wonder, do you, though? Do you really understand him? Because what you did by the time of Return of the Jedi, you've kind of undone by Force Awakens, right? He's gone back to who he was in A New Hope. Like, yes, he's still very, he immediately jumps into the game once again, and, he does what he can to help by the end. But Han's character gets unwritten. I think the explanation for it is the fall of Ben Solo becoming Kylo really tore things apart, and that's very human, and I get that. But, like, look at how Han reacts to the death of Anakin, and then, to the death of Chewie and all that. Han still, like, he has to console himself on his own, but he also comes back to what has become his home, what has become his sense of identity, where it feels like he's running from that. I think the Han Solo in the new canon is a weaker Han Solo. What do you guys think about that?
It's yes and no. The idea I was getting from Bloodline is that Han comes back every couple months to spend time with Leia there on Hosnian Prime, as she's, doing her senator thing. But he goes off and he does a whole bunch of, like, charity races and that sort of thing, which is what he's off doing during most of this book. And the idea is that, from what I get, is now that the Republic is – the New Republic is established in a sense, and Han doesn't have to be involved in fighting the Empire, he's decided to go become this almost celebrity philanthropist, you know, in a sense. Obviously, he also goes out and does this because it's, you know, it's deals with racing, and that's, you know, very much back to the core of who he is and what he likes to do. And he gets to mess around with ships and, you know, pilots and hang out with pilots and all that fun stuff. But I feel like at this point, he's still loosely connected to Leia's world with the Senate and the Republic, and at least, you know, on a superficial, almost celebrity level. But that all will change when Ben falls, and he's going to go into a tailspin, is what I'm gathering, you know, and gleaning from what where he is at the beginning of Force Awakens. And so while I see where you're coming from, Carl, I'm not sure I would go as far as to say he's been completely unwritten. But he is definitely a little bit more toned down in his hands-on approach with the New Republic. That's for sure.
See, I'd say Carl's on point with that, only in the aspect of right now, Han and canon is still growing. So, you know, when I first watched The Force Awakens, my immediate thought was, okay, this Han is a complete wuss. I mean, you know, your son fell to the dark side, Luke Torrey gets wiped out, you walked? Like, you know, Chewie dies, I get it, you walked, you went, you know, drunk, kind of thing. But I don't know, that was one of the things that really threw me off. It's like, all of a sudden, Han and Legends had great life. Like, wow, Han really got the shaft. But like the racer angle, that was something. So there were a lot of things about Han that made me, you know, the question mark. Now, these are the interesting aspects of the book where I was kind of like, not so favorable interesting. You know, I wasn't like hating on it, but I was kind of like, well, this could go wrong in a bad way. And one of them being Chewie. At this point, Han is a racer without the Falcon and without Chewie. Chewie's gone home to Kashyyyk and has been there for quite a while. And I was just like, whoa. Depending on when Chewie went, now any book we have, they've got to explain away that, or we're going to have a continuity. I know, I hate to throw that out there, but yeah, this is, they've established that now that Chewie isn't with Han. Han doesn't even have the Falcon, which was things that really threw me off. And then I thought about, okay, well, the Legends angle, Han used to ride swoop bikes, so he was a racer. I'm like, so they brought that background around, so he's now a racer. And yet, like, when Riven Dye talks about, you know, well, it's a pirate, always a pilot, or a pirate, and they, like, he said, like, you know, there's something sinister with Han. And Leia talks about it to a similar degree about, you know, well, he always adopted all these young racer kids, kind of like he did with Luke and stuff, and he was teaching them all the lessons that he learned as a kid, all those same lessons he wanted to teach their boy. Now, granted, this could be January's way of interpreting the writing, but it did come across like Han Solo's a bad person, and he should infect my son with his negativity, his underworld upbringing and stuff. And I was like, well, you know, Leia, while you're sitting back here being this judgmental about Han's lifestyle and you don't want to talk about your dad, you're kind of like opening a door for, oh, wait, what? Lady Carissa revealed your dad? Oh, yep, it all just slapped you in the face. There's that other shoe. So I don't know. Like, I think Han Solo is definitely one of the angles that I have the hardest time with in general. Because like I said, I was always a huge fan of Han when it came to canon. And then immediately with The Force Awakens, I was just like, what did they do? But this book also establishes the fact that some of the preconceived notions that I had from The Force Awakens aren't what I thought. I had thought when Ben took out Luke's order, that's when it was dropped off, because I assumed, you know, that she's Luke's. But we now learn that when this happens, Rey's already been on Jakku for a while. So there's all these questions that are coming up that we're waiting for more content to kind of give us that background. So I see where Carl's coming from, but at the same time, Jason, I also see where you're saying, because as this canon grows, we're going to get more details and more of the backstory, and we'll be able to fill those gaps where right now we're putting a lot of assumptions out there. I mean, because there's just information.
That's a good point, yeah. Yeah, I'm probably jumping too quick to a conclusion. And that's the thing, you know, I think it's tough for any of us who, you know, are really immersed in Legends as it was coming out. You know, we do have, and Jason, I've said this a number of times, you know, even before Force Awakens came out, that it's going to be hard for any of us who thoroughly enjoyed Legends, which I think is a lot of Star Wars fans, to go into a new canon without bringing that baggage with us. You know, whether you liked it or not even, you know, you had for years this understanding of where Luke went, where Han went, where Leia went. You know, we had a, you know, 30-odd years of this Legends material building, and now it's just in a very different place. So it's tough because, you know, as much as I critique a lot of later Legends, it's still, you know, a lot of the early stuff, though, you know, I'm thinking like Jedi Academy trilogy, the Thrawn trilogy. So much of that is like how I started to understand the big three. And this movie is just has them all in very different places. And you know, I think Han's one of the big ones. And, you know, it is. It's weird. Like Han and Chewie aren't together. You know, that's something we learned that in Bloodline. You know, the two of them aren't together because Chewie's back home on Kashyyyk. And, you know, I guess to some degree it makes sense, right? Like Chewie, his life debt to Han will give him a lot of life to live. You know, Wookiees live to be like 900 years old. Humans don't make it that long, you know, so he's going to have another life. But it's just weird. Like everything's just kind of split up, you know, and I think I was watching, or no, we weren't watching Star Wars, but I was doing like a Skype hangout the other night with Joe Hogan. And I was talking to him about, you know, I think, you know, now that it's 6 months removed from Force Awakens, I still love that movie. I think it's a great story. But at the end of the day, I think what still just doesn't quite sit right with me, and I think still for a lot of fans, I think they can probably, you know, sympathize with this, is it broke up our family. You know, like the end of Return of the Jedi is just so damn perfect. You know, I mean, everything, it falls into place, and Force Awakens just kind of sees everything, you know, it's fallen apart now, and you just don't necessarily like that. You know, you don't like seeing that. And that's not to say that
especially gives you the impression that Han and Leia have been separated for a long time. At least this book, you're like, okay, cool, they're still together.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Exactly.
Exactly. And I think, and Joe made a good point to me when I kind of said that. He's like, you know, I completely agree with you. He goes, but I think it's just, again, we have to get over the fact that these aren't George Lucas's stories anymore, right? Like they're going to be going in different directions. They're just going to be different Star Wars now. And I think that's just the truth we're all going to have to kind of, you know, accept. And Jason, we talked about this a little bit at the end of our last episode. So I don't want to, you know, redo that point, but you know, I think that is still kind of the sad point, because even when you're reading Bloodline, you know, Han is obviously a very minor character. You know, his little bit of interaction is either Leia kind of remembering something fondly about him, you know, playing with little Ben when he was a baby, or, you know, like those short little, like, you know, Skype calls that they have. and obviously then kind of towards the end of the novel, when she runs into a jam, like an actual action jam, Han shows up and saves the day, which was really cool. Like, it's a great scene. Han shows up and he's there for her. You know, he's being the Han Solo that we fell in love with. You know, he's there for his wife. It's very clear how much he cares for her. You know, and that's a great part of the novel, but then he just kind of goes off again. And it just seems weird, especially with, like, you know, when somebody bombs the Senate building on Hosnian Prime, I don't buy that Han doesn't show up. You know, now, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, because Mark, I know you're listening through right now. It's been a little while since I've read it, but is it that when that happens, is that because, like, remember how Han is going on this journey and he tells Leia he's out of Skype range for a while?
Yeah, he was, and he had told her if she hadn't sent that message, because she sent him a message saying, you know, hey, I'm okay. And he said, hey, if you hadn't sent that, I'd have been there. And there was also another scene, too, when all of it goes down where he's like, I can stay. And she, you know, and she has the internal monologue, which is great for us, the readers, where it's kind of like, you know, she's like, oh, if I do it, I'm like strapping a dog, you know, like I'm putting a horse in the fence, you know, like this horse is meant to be running free in the, you know, in the field. And yeah, he'll do good for a month, but after that, he's going to wither and die. And I'm like, I get the logic, but at the same time, I'm like, Leia, you're allowing yourself to be miserable. Like, and that was the angle I think I had an issue with Leia, because she's always been so strong, you know, she's always been the strong one. And while she's still strong throughout this, she's so alone, and everything is because of her own choices. And again, she's got logic for why she does it, but I'm just like, that's, as Nathan would always say, that's not Leia.
She is kind of by herself, but she's like, I'll stay here with the burden of politics. You guys go out and do what you guys want to do. You know, she's honestly, that's a mom thing. You know, knowing my own mom talking to her going, hey, stop it. You do your own stuff too. But that's a mom thing. It's a total mom thing. She's going to stay, you know, back at base, so to speak, and, you know, take care of the duties and the responsibilities and, you know, and all this stuff. And she's going to let everybody else go out and do their thing. And so I guess I kind of got that idea. But, yeah, she is very alone, and it's all her own doing at this point, you know. She's still strong and she can still handle it, but, you know, she doesn't have to go it alone. And at this point, Leia doesn't really get that.
Yeah.
Did you guys catch the Yuuzhan Vong like reference in this book?
No.
See, okay, the Imaxine Warriors, when they talk about, you know, granted, not these Imaxine Warriors, because they give you the impression that this group of Imaxine Warriors is just donning the name of the original Imaxine Warriors. But the original Imaxine Warriors, as they put it, was like a faction or an alien race that was very Mandalorian-like. Just loved to battle all the time. And I was like, oh, that sounds very Vong-like. And they got to the point where they knew they were going to have to go up against the Republic, you know, back before the Empire. And they knew that they couldn't take them on, so they knew they'd lose. So they just decided to leave the galaxy and just travel between galaxies. I was like, huh, sounds a lot like the Vong, or the Vong's the enemy that kicked the Vong out of their galaxy kind of thing. I was just like, oh, I wonder if that's like a purposeful reference that they occasionally do, because we do know that they were going to slip the Vong into the Clone Wars at one point.
Yeah, Dave Filoni was wanting to do that. So
that's the angle about, you know, when you were talking, Carl, about taking things for granted from legends, you know, and now you're in this new era. It's like, you don't know what makes the crossover. Like Tarkin never had a first name in the films. And, you know, we got a name in Legends, and then we were like, oh, hey, look, with this new Tarkin book, they gave him the same name. So we're like, okay, he's still Wolof. But you just don't even know. We don't even know if the planets are all in the same location. I mean, yeah, we've had people at panels and stuff at Celebration go, we're not rebuilding the galaxy, but what does that really mean?
Right. Yeah. 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 One thing I kind of just – sorry, switching gears back to Leia a little. One thing I do really like, though, and again, this is what I really like about Claudia Gray. I think she's a great character writer, because you're getting a lot of this in Lost Stars. But she does a great job of explaining who Leia is in a way that I just don't remember Legends doing, and that's not to say that they didn't do it. I've never keyed in a lot on Leia. You know, I've always been a Han and Luke guy when it comes to those stories. Boy, that makes me sound really chauvinistic. It's not anything against Leia. It's just, you know, I keen because I love Han and I love Luke's journey. But, you know, Claudia Gray does an awesome job at kind of explaining, you know, Leia's entire life was kind of somebody, you know, she was part of this rebellion movement. She was constantly being hunted, right? Like, it leads to this. Leia's always been somebody who's had anxiety, right? Anxiety about things just kind of falling apart because she witnessed so much horror, really, you know. I think it really gives you a sense of just the toll of what that galactic civil war really entailed. You know, I mean, you get throughout this book, you know, mentions of how many deaths there were in the war. You know, when you watch these films, you know, it's a fantasy story in a way. It's a mythological fantasy. You don't think about the reality of it. These books are now kind of giving you a sense of the reality of what it looks like. But I think she does such a great job of explaining how, you know, Leia is this character who's, she kind of has this, just this constant anxiety, this constant almost pessimism that things are going to fall apart. And I think that was really well explained, because it does explain her character. And Jason, I think you're really hitting that on the point, you know, about her kind of just being the mom. You know, she does stay back because she needs to make sure that this, you know, this stuff that she's bled her whole life into the rebellion and now into the formation of the New Republic. She can't just walk away. You know, and the book even kind of opens with her thinking about, like, I've had enough of this. I'm going to just run off with Han and we're going to have a honeymoon experience the rest of our life. And Han's totally like, yeah, that'd be great, babe, but you probably don't really want to do that. I mean, Han knows her well enough to know that she wouldn't be pleased. And I think he even makes a joke, you know, we'd end up killing each other within a few weeks. You know, like,
and her response was great. Oh, but the fun we'd have in those weeks.
Yeah. You know, and I think, it's, You know, I love that aspect. I felt like this is it. Well, and it probably is one of the biggest like Leia perspective books we've ever gotten. It just does such a great job of explaining her character and why she is where she is. You know, I for one didn't have an issue that she's not a full on Jedi or she hasn't. You know, we don't really know. You know, Mark, you've kind of said this. You know, we don't really know still a lot of stuff because we don't have a lot of information still. But it is clear she's not a Jedi. She's not part of the Jedi Order. She doesn't seem to have a lightsaber. You know, she's not what she ended up becoming. You know, 30 years out from Return of the Jedi in Legends, right? Like 30 years out from Return of the Jedi, she's a full blown Jedi Knight. She is certainly not that in our new, you know, in our new universe. And I, for one, am okay with that because it would make sense that her constant focus is going to be, you know, on the political situation. That's her craft. That's her trade. That's what she's going to do.
It also helps Luke be the last of the Jedi and the first of the new.
Right. And if we can, if you guys wouldn't mind, because I mean, we can talk about this all night, but I don't want to go too much longer. And I really do, though. I want to switch gears and talk a little bit about Luke. And there's not much to say in light of this book, but there's some things I really want to pick up on. And to me, one of the biggest things is, you know, Luke doesn't seem to be respected, certainly not in the way he is in, you know, in Legends. You know, there seems to he's a very mysterious figure at this point. And also something, too, you know, I mean, Han insinuates that Luke was starting a new Jedi Order and it all falls apart. Well, it seems to be 6 years before Force Awakens, there doesn't seem to be a Jedi Order. They don't openly talk about it. And Luke's off with Ben doing God knows what. You know, I mean, they're off on some sort of mysterious adventure, which I'm sure we'll learn about later on. But there doesn't seem to, Luke doesn't seem to have done what he was supposed to do, in my opinion. You know, it doesn't seem that there's a Jedi Order, and maybe if there was, it was just so small, it never really became part of the New Republic. Or maybe also Luke learned from the mistakes of the Clone Wars and knows not to mix, you know, church and state. You know, I'm not sure, but Luke is somebody who is, in my opinion, a very different character. In Bloodline, you know, and definitely in The Force Awakens. I don't know. What do you guys think about that? And one last thing to think about, too, is what do you think about the fact that Luke is in exile come Force Awakens? Is that the Luke Skywalker, one that we meet in Return of the Jedi, and two, certainly a much different Luke than we met in Legends? Guys, go.
Yeah, that's not the Luke that I know of. Mm-hmm. To turn to burn like that. But the thing that I think about is like, okay, in Legends, before Luke's nephew joins the Order, he's had three, maybe four or five generations or classes of Jedi graduate through his Praxum and Academy at that point. And again, that whole background that we still don't know as it's coming out, Ben could be the first that he's training, or he's already established an order, and that order's running, and he's like, hey, guys, you know, Cam, Solsar, you made the jump over to canon. We're going to put you in charge because you've been around the longest, and I'm going to go and train my nephew, do some one-on-one training here, you know, because I saw Grandpa's Darth Vader, but we don't want to tell him that yet. But, you know, one of those kind of things where the order's doing its thing, and Luke goes off and does some kind of exile or hermitage or whatever to do some one-on-one training or something. It's like, you get the feel that whatever happened between Kylo and Luke that set him off and running, you know, it was pretty bad. And I don't know which is worse, you know, having Jason be like the first, you know, like the first one you've taught, your Robin to your Batman, and he's the one that wipes out your, you know, your Teen Titans, or like, or is he, you know, the last one to come and he's your Kip Duron and he wipes out everybody in front of him? Like, I'm not sure which one of those is the one I'm gonna be more excited for. But either way, I cannot wait for that story. I hope to God they put it in a book. I just don't know are we going to see it after episode 8, or are they going to make us wait till episode 9? Like, that's that background that I just can't wait to get it. But getting back to what you asked, the second part, though, I cannot see Luke walking, turning and walking like that. I mean, think about Legends. His nephew kills his wife. And while you know, he still stayed in the fight, even though he was like, you know, I would love to take out my nephew right now, but if I do, I mean, come on, let's be honest here. I'll be the next Vader. Jaina, come on, take your brother out. You know, like, on one hand, I'm like, okay, well, you know, if it was bad enough, I could see Luke being like, I am so seething right now. If I do anything, I'm going to slip. I'm going to, Yoda said, once you start, I'm in a bad place. I'm already starting down this path in my mind. If I even step for, I've got to just check out. I don't know if you guys have ever been there, but sometimes you get in those fight situations where you're just like, I got to walk. This is the time to walk. It's got to be good, because if it's not good, I'm going to be mad. I'm going to be like, that's not Luke. That's not Luke.
That can be your new mantra.
Yeah. Man, it's so very different, because obviously, last thing Yoda tells Luke basically before he says there's another Skywalker is to pass on what you have learned. And as of Bloodline, there is no confirmation of anybody that Luke has passed on anything to other than Ben.
Yep.
Not to say that hasn't been the case, but as far as what we get from Leia, Luke and Ben are off doing some sort of quest or pilgrimage or some sort of
I think they're off as the Silver Monkeys playing Legends of the Hidden Temple. That's my guess. Sorry.
But they're off doing some sort of Jedi stuff, what's the word I'm looking for?
Jedi nomadic.
There we go, the Jedi steps. Yeah, that they're living some sort of nomadic life. And whether or not they're by themselves or there's other Jedi with them, or if there is a Jedi training area temple that Luke has already established, or after Ben falls, Luke goes, okay, we need to start something for real now, and he tries to pour all of his attention into creating a Jedi Order after Ben falls. We don't know yet. There's so many options, but based solely off of what we got from Force Awakens, from Return of the Jedi, the fact that Luke is basically an exile is something that never sat well with me. The fact that, from the opening crawl of Force Awakens, it's, Luke Skywalker has disappeared. That always just, every time I see it, it's sort of that little tweak in the back of my mind going, I wish that wasn't the case, because, Luke is by far the character I'm most invested in, from the original trilogy and in the post-Return of the Jedi legends, because Jedi are my thing. And so the idea that I've sort of retconned that away is, Luke is trying to find, the first Jedi temple to, find some way to get guidance for what to do next, and that he's not actually just on the run in The Force Awakens is basically how I've sort of convinced myself that it's okay. But
I'm going to borrow that,
because the idea that, Luke is hightailing it, is not something that sits right with me. Even if we're just looking at the films, that doesn't seem right to me. If Luke sees himself as a problem and he's trying to take himself out of the equation, that still doesn't make sense to me, because he would try and do something to, fix the situation, or at least make sure that the people close to him knew he was okay. And so it's just a really interesting thing, and we don't have the information at this point. We just don't have hardly any information on Luke Skywalker post Return of the Jedi, especially this close to Force Awakens, to really make any accurate judgments of what's going on with him. And that's kind of starting to bug me, because I really want to go, see, Luke is that good guy that I remember from Return of the Jedi and the OT, and he's not, become this sort of wimpy deadbeat that's running off to the far ends of the galaxy to stop being a bother to everybody, So, anyway.
Well, another little bit of insight that we get with the Jedi, it was in a passing comment, but it also kind of brings up the aspect of Leia not being a Jedi. She's talking to Ty Lynn, and you know, he asks her, he says, there's something I've been meaning to ask you for a long time, and I finally feel I know you well enough to dare. If I overstep my bounds, please tell me. Uh-oh, Leia thought. And she goes, I'll tell you, Ty Lynn. Just go ahead and ask me. Did you ever consider following in your brother's path and becoming a Jedi? Leia found herself caught short. Why do you ask? They say on my world that the Force sometimes runs strong in certain families. So much of the lore of the Jedi had been lost, but on Galienta, the old religion had remained strong. History had become legend, but some of the legends were still told. Galienta had been one of Luke's first destinations when he began his research into the Jedi Knights of old. Talon continued, if that is true, then you might have the potential, just like your brother. And my son, she thought, but did not say. If you have the ability, then I cannot imagine why you would not become a Jedi as well. He finished, surely I've known few people who can make a finer Jedi Knight than you. And again, more of that insight that Carl was talking about, that Claudia Gray does such a good job. Leia inclined her head in gratitude for the compliment, but she could not answer right away, because she could not tell the full truth. The Force was too important a subject to be shared lightly, even with Ty Lynn, her ally and friend. Her safe, sensible, and as far as it went, honest reply, my duty has always been here, in the work of creating a new and better government. And he sighed as if in regret. You alone can determine your rightful destiny. Now, it's not much, but I like the fact that Galienta, we find out that the Jedi religion is still holding sway, you know, that Luke actually went there. I mean, so to find out that there are planets where the Jedi never disappeared like we had always thought they did, like, that's something that blows me away, because, you know, come A New Hope, the Jedi were all but a lost myth, and there's planets where they're still active and stuff. Like, wait, what? Like, isn't that like the first place that Vader and them are going to show up after Order 66 during the Purge? Like, I mean, those are things that, like, I get a kick out of those little kind of throwaway references, right? I mean, it's just a small, quick, and itty bitty, but it rocked.
And it's really timely that you pull out that comment because of the information that we're now getting on some of the characters coming out of Rogue One. And there's the character played by Donnie Yen, Chirrut, I think is his name.
Mm-hmm.
And Entertainment Weekly has, you know, been all over the place with, you know, information and pictures from Rogue One. And he's a blind, basically warrior monk who follows the Jedi religion. He's not force sensitive to any significant degree, and he's not a Jedi, but he believes in what the Jedi believe and tries to live and follow that code to an extent, you know, from what, you know, little, you know, 3-sentence blurb we're getting from Entertainment Weekly. And so it's interesting to see that they're really seeding those ideas into this new canon, is that, you know, while the Jedi was definitely an order, the lifestyle that they lived basically spawned this religion, and that is still that idea that is still out there in the galaxy, and there it still permeates so much in certain areas of the galaxy at large. And it's very interesting to see what sort of importance that takes moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, there are a couple moments in this book that really got to me. And I think they got to me the most when I was listening to January talking, doing the narrative for it. One of them was right after the napkin bombing, when they're trying to look for Leia and stuff. And Greer looked around, searching for a glimpse of the spring green robe Corey had been wearing. Corey, can you hear me? Corey, you're okay. Greer turned to see Corey hurrying up to her, curly hair disheveled and gown torn, but otherwise all right. I couldn't see you for a second. It was like the explosion stole all the light for a moment. The world went blank and it was turned upside down. Now that line, when she reads it, like I welled up. I mean, I was like, oh my, like the panic in the girl's voice when she was reading it, I felt like it was actually a person who just lived through the drama and was right there and was just like, I mean, her voice cracked as she was talking and it broke. That one got to me. And then the second one was when Ransom Gustavo is saying what was going on. He's like, I did not come without proof, Ransom said. I will now present my evidence for everyone to hear, so that they all know how close we came to allowing Lord Vader's daughter to rule over all of us. Proof? What possible proof could there be? Leia stared at Ransom, aware that she should be feeling angry or betrayed, but unable to summon any emotions besides horror and confusion. And granted, while this is going on in the audiobook, the music cues are just like setting you up emotionally. You're like, oh boy, oh, this is not good. Then Ransom held up a box, not just any box, a keepsake chest. Every child in Alderaan had one. Parents and grandparents carved the designs, but only the child decided what to put inside. Placing one of your possessions inside the keepsake chest meant that when you had outgrown it, but recognized its importance to you, in adulthood, you could open up the chest, look back, and see how you had chosen to tell your own story. Leia thought of that keepsake chest, looked a lot like hers, but she hadn't seen it in about 30 years. And surely it had been destroyed with Alderaan. Nobody was ever supposed to open a keepsake chest without permission, but Ransom opened this one now. And from within, he pulled out a music box, one Leia recognized so instantly that the memory pierced her heart like an arrow. She had no time to wonder how it had survived or come into Ransom Castarfo's possession. Ransom had already opened it, and it began to play the tune. Mirror bright shines the moon. And then Bail Organa began to speak. Just the sound of his voice brought tears to her eyes, but every word revealed her deepest secret. In despair, Leia thought, "They're using both of my fathers against me." Bail Organa, who so often spoke out in the Old Republic and Imperial Senates, who had possessed the courage to stand against Palpatine when nearly every other planetary leader had bowed to the Emperor's power, uttered his last words to the public from the music box, played on every speaker to be reproduced by every news source around the galaxy within moments. "Your father has become Darth Vader." And I just, man, I mean, that, I think those are the elements that Claudia Gray just really nails. Like, she gets into the characters. She does a really good job of setting things up. I really did. I did enjoy this book. I would love to see her do something like this, but with Luke. I would love to see her get in their head and give us the point of view of Luke and them. Like, you know, Luke gets the message, and that's where that book starts. It's, oh boy. You know?
Yeah, definitely. And this is one of the big climaxes of the book, you know, that while it's not, you know, the ultimate climax, is one of the biggest points of this book is the reveal of Leia's parentage. And we've sort of talked around it a bit, and it was one of those things where the way that it all happened, it just hurt. It just hurt reading it. You know, it was like, oh, I can't, you know. We were really starting to like this Ransom Castarfo guy, you know, even though he's, you know, supposed to be Leia's political opponent, but they were becoming friends and working together. And, you know, we were really starting to like this guy. And then he gets used by Lady Carice, who's just a ditz. Sorry, I'm not a fan of her as a character. That the way that what she's written as and this purpose that she serves is perfect.
Self-entitled and all about that.
Yeah. Well,
I did like the way, though, that she wasn't going to do it at first. But
she told herself she wasn't going to do it, but she was going to do it.
Ransom he was on the trail, and that was where she mistakenly thought he knew. She has this moment where she's like, oh, he knows. And then she goes and talks to, you know, one of her ups, and they're like, well, bring him into the fold. And so she's like, oh, I'll do this to bring him in on the fold because Vader had done all this bad stuff. Like, so that organicness of the way it all played out was just well crafted.
Yeah, but that whole reveal, you know, reading that, it just hurt. It was like knives to your heart every paragraph that you read. It was so well done. And of course, you know, Leia loses all political clout and is only able to speak to the Senate later when Ransom casts his vote to, you know, to hear her motion. So it's, you know.
Yeah, and when they actually picked Ty Lynn to replace her, or when Ty Lynn actually decides to, and she was like, how did I not know? Oh, well, I was doing my own thing. And then she realized she's not in the circle of power anymore. And that epiphany, like, that was a pretty harsh moment. You know, I mean, knowing everything that we've known about her from Legends, I'm like, man, girl, you just got shafted hard. Like, you're completely cut out. But at the same time, it had that New Jedi Order Vong feeling. Because, like, at the end of the New Jedi Order, you're like, Leia's done with politics. Like, okay, clearly. Like, they've hosed her for the last time. And that all happened in this one book. I like that, you know, it was open, done, close that door. You know, it didn't drag it out for 5 books or, you know, and you're kind of like, oh, we're all done now. Can you be done too? Like, I like the way that played.
Yeah. And well, and I like that, you know, they transition it into, you know, Leia is cut out from this political movement now, and she has come to terms with that, but she's also learned a new horrible truth, you know, that there is this thing known as the First Order coming to power. Or does she learn that? I don't know if she does directly learn
that. She knows that there is something out there pulling strings.
Right. Yeah. They wrapped it
all up with the Imperial lady, and she's like, no, there's more to it. And even the one lady that was on her side is like, at this point, she's like, Leia, we've got to grieve for Ty Lynn, because Ty Lynn gets assassinated by the – what was her name? Another one of those ladies. I can't remember her name, but she was like a shadowy figure. She worked for the Empire.
Yeah.
And her and Lady Carice were butting heads, and she was the one that actually put the napkin bomb in motion, which honestly ticked off Lady Carice as well. But it was like they pinned it all on her, and Leia was like, open your eyes. It's too convenient. And they shuffled it all under, and Leia's like, she has that moment again, like the New Jedi Order, where Wedge is like, we got to create this inner circle. We got to take care of stuff. Leia's like, all right, I've got to get back into the thick of things. You guys don't know what you're doing.
Yeah,
and she forms the resistance.
Yeah. The last part of this book is the first meeting of the resistance, and I like that. I like the way it ended. So, what did you guys think of the ending there?
I thought it was great. You know, it definitely sets up, you know, where we're going to be going, and that, you know, it's the perfect wrap up to what happens to Leia. You know, she, you know, this was kind of, you know, the beginning of the book, kind of, we get a character arc in here, which is great. And I think this was something that a lot of Legends books didn't do, or at least if they did it, I didn't think they did it very well, cause I don't remember. But you know, the book begins with Leia just wanting to be out in a way, right? Like she's tired. She's been at this game for 25 years. Since, you know, the fall of the Empire, not to mention pretty much her whole life in the rebellion before that, Leia's tired. She wants out. You know, she wants to be off with Han, just kind of enjoying life, but she just can't. You know, that's not who she is. So throughout the book, she's working hard to try to get things right so that she can finally maybe step away a bit. And then everything falls apart when they find out who her father is. And then the book ends with her recognizing that, you know, what she's helped form now, just it's not going to stand as it is. So she puts together another new movement. You know, this is so Leia, and is, you know, vows to take action, vows to start working, you know, on the side to make sure that, you know, things, they're ready to meet this new threat that she knows is out there. You know, and I thought that did such a great job. You know, it shows Leia getting the freedom she wanted in a way, right? Like she's not going to be part of this bullcrap game anymore. She's going to be in control of something that she has created and that she knows will have a real actual purpose. So again, I think it really rounds out her character so well, and it really does point to what we're going to get, you know, when we get to Force Awakens 6 years later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I liked, you know, we get to watch Joss Seastriker. We learn about his friendship with Snap, and, you know, we get to see the other pilots and stuff. We even get to see Allo Nasty show up and stuff.
Right.
I like the fact, again, it was just all organic. You know, it didn't feel like much. All the references kind of felt like they were like throwaway moments. They all happen in a natural place. You know, they're all having downtime. They're all watching races and stuff. Then Leia shows up, and I love Snap's comment. Oh, it's Calf. Oh, well, back in my day, X-Wing pilots used to makes a mean hooch. Oh, well, in that case, it tastes a lot like that and has some pretty good side effects. I'm like, yes, that's awesome. And it just, again, that camaraderie that she has with her troops and stuff. You know, you feel like it's that whole into the garbage chute, fly boy. Like, you know, like she just has this way of just talking to the guys, you know, like, I don't know. I love that aspect about it. And the fact that her ragtag resistance, they already feel like there's this close-knitness to them all. I mean, Joff, he grew up on one of these planets where there was no action, so he's been dying for action. And now that he realizes, you know, by just being around Leia, you kind of find yourself in the action. And he happens to know a bunch of other pilots that are all itching for some action. And so, you know, hey, it just naturally worked out. I love the way that worked out. You had also Greer with her blood burn and the way that worked out, which... it was so subtle that by the end of the book, I don't know if you guys realized it, but Greer chooses to basically sacrifice her life to join the resistance.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wasn't until, again, last night when I finished that book that I was like, that was pretty dang powerful. Because Leia's like, you know, no, you're not going to do this. And she's just like, no, you have no choice. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to live my life the way I want to do it. And by golly, I'm going to be in this fight. And I don't care if it takes me out. And, you know, that's a powerful message. Like, I thought that was really cool. And, you know, you also take in consideration, she was drop dead gorgeous. You know, you figure this out all through Josh's perspective. You know, he's just like, oh, wow, she's so, like, don't say something stupid. You know, like, Josh is the classic teenage boy. You know, he's like, he's looking at her, he's just like, she's so beautiful, I don't even have a shot. And then when he finds out she's going to die, like, you know, on his planet, like, having open emotions is an okay thing. And he's immediately like, that's so unfair. And she's like, you're right, that isn't fair. Thank you. I kept like wondering, like, is there going to be a relationship here between these two? But no, you get to the end, you realize through it all, it's like she's willing to, you know, stick with Leia so much that she's willing to just basically not really throw her life away, but some things are worth dying for. And she recognizes that Leia knows what it is and that she's willing to follow Leia to her own death. And while I don't know, that could be a more powerful message if the grand public knows it. I like knowing it myself. I found it was a pretty heroic moment on Greer's part.
Yeah. All right.
What?
Go ahead, Carl.
Did you have any final thoughts?
Just final thoughts. I really like the book. It's definitely in my top two or three of the new canon books that have come out so far. And I would say is probably an essential read if you are reading any of the new canon material, more so than in any of the other books, more so than even like Aftermath or something like that. But it's definitely, if you want to know some of what's going on in the lead up to The Force Awakens, this is sort of an essential read. And I would highly, highly, highly recommend this book to anybody out there. So. It's a good one.
Yeah, if you're definitely going to go into the TFA era, this is definitely a critical book for you. You know, essential is definitely the way to put it. It fills in, like we said, you know, this is your journey to The Force Awakens. You know, you grab this book, you grab the Before the Awakening by Greg Rucka, and I think those two books will give you more background than anything the visual dictionary has given us since the movie came out. you know, I put it up in my top three, I think. I think this is my third. I'm going to go Dark Disciple, Lost Stars, and then this one, which is pretty cool in the aspect that Claudia Gray is two of my top three. She's definitely someone, I would love to see her get in Luke and Ben's head, give us some of that point of view, maybe give her the book where Ben takes out Luke's order. You know, I'm dying for that. Can't wait. I also like on the hardcover here, you know, and I wonder if this is Eric Schoenweiss that did this. They went with Red, the blood red for the Star Wars and Bloodline and all that. I always love it when they change up. You know, they always do just weird things every now and again, and that was a cool one.
Yeah. Carl, final thoughts on Bloodline?
Well, I'm with both of you guys. I think it's an essential read. It's just below Lords of the Sith of my favorite for the new canon. I think Claudia Gray is one of the best authors we've had in Star Wars in a long time. Again, just for the way she writes characters, the way she writes emotion. And, you know, one thing, I don't want to get into too much detail because I know we're wrapping this up. But one thing I really liked was the fact that she was able to show how Leia and Ransom become friends. And it essentially almost becomes a bonding over their hatred of Vader. You know, and again, it does share that, you know, Leia's in a very different spot. Every time she reminisces about, you know, I remember this point where she says, every time Luke talks about what happened, you know, in Anakin's last moments, he has this beatific smile on his face, you know, like Luke is just so proud of what happened there, but Leia just doesn't get it. And it doesn't seem like she really wants to, because for her, all she can remember is this you know, this monster that tortured her and made her watch her entire world get blown up. You know, so it's a very different Leia. She's not at that point of healing, and I appreciate that. And that's this point for her and Ransom to bond and understand each other as human beings. I think I loved it, too, because as much as some of the political stuff is a little close to home, I like kind of her, you know, her way of around that is getting to know people as people, right? Like, you know, we're always demonizing the other side, but Ransom and Leia at least take the time to get to know each other and understand where each is coming from. While they don't agree, they understand what they're both working for. So, yeah, I mean, this is a great story. We get a lot of great backstory. Very important read and a very fun read. It's not your typical, like, EU book where it's full of, like, action-packed fun. Yeah. It's not quite there. I think the drama lies more in the characters, which to me is great. I'd prefer that over, you know, a 40-page dogfight. So that's my opinion.
Retconning of New Hope.
Say again.
Did you catch the retcon of A New Hope?
No. What do you mean?
So subtle. Okay, so when she's talking to Ren Rivendi. I think it was Ren Rivendi. They were using a very thick accent, and she was talking in her head about how, you know, it was very much like Tarkin's, and, you know, that when she was with Tarkin, she was mocking Tarkin using his own accent against him, the Coruscanti accent.
Oh,
so that's why her British accent disappears after the first movie. She was mocking Tarkin. Way to go, Claudia Gray.
Nice. I did catch that. All right. Well, we need to start wrapping up this episode. Before we do that, Mark, did you want to introduce our new matchup for our Larians to weigh in on for our next episode?
Yeah, it's a wrap. Well, so I was thinking my first one before I, you know, did the Kylo one, I was originally going to go with Qarran Horn versus Kyle Katarn, but I thought you guys may have already done that one, so I come up with another one that is actually canon, and one that I think might actually be one of the hardest ones out there for me personally. This is the old BB versus Chopper versus R2.
Ooh,
that's hard, man. I'm conflicted. I like L3.
BB-8 versus Chopper versus R2-D2. I like it. This is... Oh. Wow. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering how this is all going to go down.
It's a rough one. I'm sorry, guys.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark.
I need a tally. I need a poll. We need charts. We need graphs. Let's do this.
All right.
Man.
Yep. Carl, if they want to weigh in on that matchup or comment on anything we've talked about this episode, where can they do that?
They can do it on Facebook, facebook.com/WampasLairPodcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/WampasLair. Or shoot us an email at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com.
And Mark, where can folks reach you?
Well, anyone type in Electrical Rogue 2, it's probably me.
Right. And be sure to check out Star Wars Report and Star Wars Beyond the Films and listen to Mark continue to geek on about Star Wars more hardcore than just about anybody else out there. Anything else, Carl, before we wrap up this episode?
I am all set.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, so much for listening to this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been episode number 187, Bloodline and the Big Three. For Carl and Mark, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.